promoting scientific research and discovery in respect, as we should, we must also be alert to the equal and opposite danger that public policy could itself become the captain of a scientific, technological elite.
We've signed a climate convention on the importance of economic instruments and free markets. Were included in this mammoth Agenda 21 document and the Rio Declaration. Now, let me be clear on one fundamental point. The United States fully intends to be the world's preeminent leader in protecting the global environment.
Coming up, Technocracy News. Welcome to Technocracy News and Trends. Patrick Wood here, editor-in-chief and founder of Technocracy News and Trends. This is the only place on the internet where you find a thorough analysis and critique of technocracy as it is moving forward throughout the world, and especially in our country, in America. And it really is a clear and present danger that we face today. It's a greater danger than communism and Marxism, which are thoroughly destroying our country these days. But the idea of the technocrats is, out of the ashes of ruined society will rise the technocracy that will be the total social engineering of the planet. The first story underscores just how opposite all of the United Nations agenda is as it plays out in America. This has to do with smart cities. And smart cities are promised to promote social inclusion. We see this language all over the United Nations literature. And we see it in our literature as proponents of these policies try and convince us that this is going to be the greatest thing since sliced bread. Smart cities are predicted openly and forcefully to promote social inclusion. But they don't. Just the opposite is taking place. The title of this story today is Smart Cities Promote Social Isolation, Not Togetherness. And we have seen this phenomenon of opposites frequently as we study technocracy. In my book, Technocracy, The Hard Road to World Order, I included two sources from the early 1990s that stated that the original specification of Agenda 21, which was supposed to promote nirvana, actually would end up destroying the planet, ecologically, politically, and economically. There were warning signs along the way. But we see the concept of opposites happening over and over and over again. Everything they promise is backwards. I wrote to start this article, technocrats design cities according to their, quote, science of social engineering, where citizens are just animals in the maze to be controlled, directed, managed, and surveilled. Smart cities will be the scourge of humanity, not its salvation. The author of this story writes, George Orwell's novel 1984, published in 1949, imagines a society organized by a totalitarian state whose daily life is regimented and Big Brother programs every move. Not a totalitarian government, but a corporate power combining with new applications of information technologies may be leading us to a similar society. Digital technologies are transformative. The instant communications of the internet, the joy of FaceTime with friends and relatives, and Google's vast trove of information have immeasurably enriched human life. Cell phones have made almost the whole world accessible. What digital technologies have done in medicine, industries, transportation, commercial dealings are no less than a miracle. Yet it does not mean that they are without social cost and that every new use of these technologies will increase human welfare. The digital technologies combined with sensors and satellites are now being applied to our daily activities, threatening the basis of social organization and human relations. We are increasingly being programmed to act, behave, and relate with each other in predetermined ways. Two trends are striking: a reduction in human contacts and face-to-face dealings, and the loss of spontaneity and personal decision-making in daily life, increasing social isolation and regimentation. The social fallout of these smart modes of living is social isolation, loneliness, loss of personal choices and freedom to make decisions. The penetration of digital technologies in the name of economic efficiency in our small, casual, and everyday interactions erodes opportunities for human connections. And this, of course, is exactly the problem. We see increasing rates of suicides amongst young people. We see polls that are telling us that many young people today believe they have no friends whatsoever, no human contact with anybody that cares about them. And the statistics are shocking. As many as 50% of young people today are friendless. This essentially means that not only do they not have friends of the same sex, but they also do not have friends of the opposite sex, which does not bode well for the repopulation of mankind as time goes on. And we see the level of marriages and the level of lasting commitments going down all over the world, not just in America, but all over the planet. The second story today has to do with San Diego, which bills itself as a global city. That's questionable in my mind whether it really is, but they believe that they are a global city. They're aspiring to be that in any case. And so San Diego has been one of those progressive cities that has adopted every conceivable element of smart city technology that they can, hoping to join the world stage of cities like New York and Paris and London. The headline of this story is San Diego is to have 4,200 streetlight cameras by 2020. Well, it's a little misleading. They already have 3,600 streetlight cameras because they've completely retrofitted their city with these new street lamps that contain not only cameras, but microphones as well and other sensors. All the data is transmitted wirelessly back to a monitoring station. The article starts out, when police stopped a taxi cab early one morning last summer to find Jonathan Hernandez armed with a handgun and fleeing the scene of a fatal gas lamp quarter shooting, authorities thought it was an open and shut case. Hernandez was booked into jail on suspicion of murder, but the investigation from last August would take an unexpected turn. Sergeant Louis Maggi of the San Diego Police Department Homicide Unit said, obviously, with any of these investigations, there's a great deal of follow-up to do, but it seemed pretty straightforward at the time. The next day, police investigators went out to Fifth Avenue and Marcus Street, where witnesses said a vicious fight had led to the killing. Officers canvassed the area for video of the incident when they noticed a camera built into the street lamp at the intersection. San Diego had installed thousands of microphones and cameras in so-called smart street lamps in recent years as part of a program to assess traffic and parking patterns throughout the city. The technology over the last year caught the attention of law enforcement last year. When police officers picked up Hernandez last summer, they had never used a street lamp camera in an investigation. Today, such video has been viewed in connection with more than 140 police investigations. Officers have increasingly turned to the footage to help crack cases as frequently as 20 times a month. Police department officials have said that the video footage has been crucial in roughly 40% of these cases. The smart street lamps have been game-changing, said Lieutenant Jeffrey Jordan, who oversees the program for the department. He said, we've had a lot of success stories recently, a couple of convictions where people actually have seen the video through the defense attorney and immediately took a guilty plea rather than go to trial. San Diego's smart street lamp program started around 2016 to collect metadata from cameras tracking the number of people walking, biking, or driving through busy intersections. The city installed the recording system as part of an LED upgrade to its street lamps. Officials have said the new bulbs will save enough money on electricity to pay for the roughly $30 million program by 2030. 3 years later, it's still unclear what the data will ultimately be used for. One idea has been that the information, which is publicly available to web developers and others, will fuel an app that helps people find empty parking spaces. I have to say, if that's the only useful thing that they can come up with for these cameras being embedded and all over the city, something is horribly wrong. Finding empty parking spaces is worth $30 million. City officials have said they also hope to use the system to track parking meter violations. There's another good use. As well as the number of people using bike lanes. Right now, only the police department has the authority to view the actual video footage, according to officials. Although subject to change, the department's internal policy says footage should be reviewed only in connection with violent crimes. And of course it's subject to change. The city can do anything they want with the cameras. They control them. They install them. They own them. And they can change policy at any time they choose. These cameras are able to transmit anything, whether it hears or sees, wirelessly and automatically back to a headquarters system that takes everything in. San Diego indeed is trying to be a big brother city. My only comment on this is that while police are regularly catching a few perpetrators on video, which is a good thing, of course, to put people away that legitimately cause crime, but it's done so at the cost of total surveillance of all citizens in San Diego. Is this really what all citizens in San Diego want, to be surveilled 24/7 on every street corner, on every sidewalk, in every car? I don't think so. Those who understand what's going on, and that probably is not all the citizens of this town either, but those who do understand it cannot possibly be happy that the police are able to watch them 24/7. Well, this is what social engineering is all about. Once you know that you are being surveilled, your behavior automatically changes. That's what social engineering is, changing your behavior. And these people know how to do it. Just by putting these things in, making it known, the more people that catch on to it say, uh-oh, I'm being watched. I better watch myself. The last article of the day is a follow-up to an article posted a couple of days ago about how the military is testing high-altitude surveillance balloons in the Midwest. Let's just lay it right out this time. Police state, U.S. military set to monitor all movement in the United States. This test, as it turns out, was not a test for some technology to be used overseas in battle zones. This technology is being tested to use in the United States. And they've now revealed that the U.S. military is conducting these high-altitude so-called mesh networking radar tests in order to fit these systems in with law enforcement and homeland security. This presents a very disturbing situation. The U.S. military is operating within the boundaries of the United States to surveil the entire population from altitudes that are roughly twice of what commercial airliners fly. Now, I've stated at the top of this article, this is important, it's now clearly stated that the military will join law enforcement and DHS to locate and deter narcotic trafficking and homeland security threats, but at the expense of tracking everything everywhere. High-altitude balloons equipped with radar and other battle zone surveillance technology can see through any weather and even through vegetation and buildings. This technology was perfected in combat zones under the label GEOINT. That stands for Geospatial Intelligence. And the project name that's been used since it was originally invented is Mastering the Human Domain. This was a whole idea behind GEOINT software that was used in Afghanistan and Iraq. Mastering the human domain means surveilling the human domain completely to analyze, determine, and predict what that society or what that group of people were intending to do. The article starts out with information we already knew. The U.S. military will conduct high-altitude mesh networking radar tests over South Dakota in order to provide a persistent surveillance system to locate and deter narcotic trafficking and homeland security threats. High-altitude balloons will fly at twice the altitude of passenger jets and use radar to simultaneously track many individual vehicles day or night through any kind of weather. Interferometric synthetic aperture radar is a radar technique used in geodesy and remote sensing. This geodetic method uses two or more synthetic aperture radars, that is SAR images, to generate maps of surface deformation or digital elevation using differences in the phase of the waves returning to the satellite or aircraft. The technique can potentially measure millimeter scale changes in deformation over spans of days to years. Synthetic aperture radar placed 20 times farther away than the military's high-altitude balloons can scan for features at 30 centimeters, that's 1 foot or less. Synthetic aperture radar from balloons would likely be able to create 3D surface images with 1 centimeter accuracy. The balloons would be able to update several times a minute. Simple high-resolution optical cameras were already used in Iraq, Afghanistan, and Dayton, Ohio, to monitor the movement of all people and vehicles. About 10 years ago, in Dayton, a Cessna flew every day for weeks and created video that could be used to TiVo all movement. My friends, this is very disturbing because this means the police state is upon us. The actions coming out of the other side of the police state are not evident yet. But the surveillance technology and methodology is here, and it's being implemented. And again, the promised benefits of this surveillance seems to be beneficial, deterring narcotic trafficking and homeland security threats. Well, that sounds innocuous. We all want to be safe. We all want to stop drugs. That's what the war on drugs is all about, isn't it? So how would they know, of course, that there's narcotics in any given car that they're tracking? Well, they don't. And how would they know automatically that something is a homeland security threat, like a terrorist going to blow something up or shoot something up? Well, it can't. But here's what they don't tell you in the story, and we find this in other stories that relate to this kind of surveillance. The high-altitude balloons will produce images of the ground that will be coordinated with ground surveillance units to properly identify those things that are being tracked. Example, if a license plate reader reads the plate of a certain automobile or truck passing a sensor that can immediately identify the ownership of the vehicle, that can be coordinated with the high altitude surveillance to say that car right there belongs to so-and-so, track it. And thereafter, everywhere that car goes that the surveillance system tracks is known to the surveillance authorities. There are many other applications of ground-based surveillance, including facial recognition and other types of sensors that can properly identify those units that are being tracked from the sky. This is total surveillance. This is the beginning of a police state. America should be absolutely infuriated that our government would allow the military to enter into policing operations on U.S. soil. And I want to say this is the exact reason that the founders of our nation created the doctrine of posse comitatus, which stated that the military that was subject to the President of the United States being the commander-in-chief would never, ever, ever be used for domestic policing because the Army and the military and Navy, etc., Air Force, all answer to one commander-in-chief, and that's the President of our country. This was a separation of powers that is an addition to the three branches of government that we have. That is the executive, the judicial, and the congressional. Those checks and balances, those separation of powers are very important. But one of the most important separations of power, that military operations would stay external to the boundaries of our nation. Now, this provided, of course, that we would have military bases within the boundaries of our nation. This is where training would take place. This is where warfare technology development would take place. And that's all fine and good. But the founders of our nation knew there would be a great, great danger if that military ever had the ability to exercise oversight or control over the citizens of our country. This has been broken down over a period of years. And now the military is asserting itself in a role of total surveillance. And again, it's important to note that geospatial intelligence was a military technology developed for the battlefield, and it's being used here now. They used it in foreign engagements under the name of Mastering the Human Domain. That's what the so-called Jade Helm exercise was all about several years ago that happened in Texas, New Mexico, and Arizona. Mastering the Human Domain, using artificial intelligence and advanced sensing technologies to track everything that moved, breathed, whether animal or people. Mastering the Human Domain meant just that. The problem is now, the citizens of our nation have become the human domain that the military intends to master. This is wrong. This is anti-American. It's anti-constitutional at this point, at least in principle, if not legally. And our government needs to be brought to account on why it is encouraging and allowing the military to have advanced operations like this within the borders of our nation, catching up all innocent citizens in our country into the surveillance network and web. There's a chapter in my book, by the way, Technocracy, the Hard Road to World Order, that deals with the entire topic of GEOINT. This is critically important. We knew it was going to be implemented in time, and now it's in the news, it's openly declared, and it's time for Americans to say something about it. I hope you'll join us in doing that. I'm Patrick Wood for Technocracy News and Trends. We'll see you next time.